The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Like Bob on Facebook at facebook.com/BobBurneyLive.
Again, welcome, welcome, welcome to Bob Burney Live. Elections do have consequences. They do. If you are pro-life, there are so many things going on in our nation's capital that should cause enormous concern. I have told you repeatedly over the last couple of months that nearly 500 abortion restrictions have been passed on local and state levels just in the last few years. 500 pro-life bills, pieces of legislation, have been passed locally and on a state level in the last few years. Well, that's the way things are supposed to work in America. That's why many people believe that Roe v. Wade should be overturned. This is a state issue, not a federal issue. And as I continue to remind you, if Roe v. Wade were overturned, that would not make abortion illegal. It would just send it back to the states where it belongs. Well, Democrats in the House and the Senate want to codify or codify, depends on how you want to pronounce it, Roe versus Wade. 224 Democrats are backing legislation on the federal level that will eliminate all state and local pro-life laws. Now, I would hope, number one, that immediately the Supreme Court would rule that unconstitutional. But this is the desire of Democrats. The bill known as the Women's Health Protection Act would codify Roe versus Wade, and President Biden supported this during his 2020 campaign. It has 48 co-sponsors in the Senate. That is almost every Democrat in the Senate, shy of two. 176 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives. All are Democrats. 224 co-sponsors represent 80% of all of the Democrats in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. And the result would be a federal law nullifying every pro-life bill, 500 plus of them that have been passed in the last several years by local and state governments. I want you to think about that. Democrats are trying desperately to overturn the will of the people in the states that make up the United States. It is shameful. I think it is wicked. I think it is evil. And personally, I think it's unconstitutional. Again, it's called the Women's Health Protection Act, and it has the not just the support, but the sponsorship of 80% of the Democrats in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. May I repeat something that I have said? I am sure I've said it hundreds of times. If you got a problem with the Republicans, so do I. The chairman of the Republican National Committee tweeted out a couple of days ago her congratulations for Pride Month, boasting about the Republican support of the LGBTQ community. I don't know about you, but I've got a problem with that. So, yeah, I got problems with the Republicans. But I can support their platform if they would just stick to the platform. Democrats on the other side, I don't understand how anyone with a biblical worldview that is even mildly pro-life, I do not understand how someone could vote for any Democrat. I just don't understand it. Anyway, that we'll keep an eye on that. The Women's Health Protection Act. And sadly, it could pass. It could pass. Many of you are familiar with the Catholic League. The Catholic League is headed by Bill Donahue. He is the president. He's a priest. And the Catholic League represents a large portion of Catholics in America, and they are decidedly pro-life, as is the Catholic Church. In other words, the Catholic League is in harmony with the Catholic Church. Other groups within the Catholic Church stand at odds with their own church and their own doctrine. But here is a statement released by the Catholic League yesterday. Quote, President Biden has been in office for less than 5 months and has already taken a public stand against core church teachings 32 separate times, the Catholic League reported this week. In a report sent this week to all of the U.S. bishops, Catholic League President Bill Donahue noted his organization, quote, has been tracking policy decisions made by President Biden that depart from Catholic teachings, and we have chronicled them. Quote, 9 of Biden's 32 decisions that violated Catholic Church doctrine took place in the 10 days after he took office. Now, again, this is the Catholic League. 9 violations of Catholic doctrine in the first 10 days after he took office. They included executive orders allowing minors to use facilities and participate in high school sports of the opposite biological sex, erasing the difference between men and women, replacing it with distinction of gender, and revoking the Mexico City policy that prohibited taxpayer funding of abortions overseas, and so forth. 32 times in the first 5 months, the Catholic League has chronicled President Biden, an outspoken Catholic, has violated his own church's teaching. 32 times. Now, why did the Catholic League release this? They're hoping that the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops will pass a resolution encouraging priests all across America to deny communion to any politician that is pro-abortion. Can I make a little prediction? It ain't going to happen. It's not going to. I hope I will be wonderfully, pleasantly surprised if after the meeting of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and I think that happens sometime this month, I will be pleasantly surprised if they pass a resolution saying that Catholic politicians who support abortion should be restricted from communion. But I don't think it's going to happen. Sadly, the American leadership of the Catholic Church has not displayed a whole lot of courage in the last several years. We'll see. I hope they do. Doubt it. Hope they do, but doubt it. Came across some interesting statistics about the state of blacks and black families in America, according to the last census. It may surprise you. In fact, it probably will.
Follow Bob on Twitter at twitter.com/BobBurneyLive.
It is amazing the perceptions of the American public and how the perception and reality are just not the same. Came across an interesting article yesterday from Star Parker. Star Parker is a black conservative activist. I've had her on my program on many occasions. She has organized a wonderful organization called CURE. And let me just read from something she posted yesterday concerning the fate economically of blacks in America today during the Trump administration. All right? These are hard, cold statistics from the Census Bureau. And I'm going to quote so I make sure that I get it accurate. Quote, let's start with the most recent annual report of the Census Bureau, Income and Poverty in the United States. According to this report, annual real median household income in the U.S. increased 6.8% in 2019, the largest annual increase recorded by the Census Bureau going back to 1967. Black median household income in 2019 increased 7.9%, the largest on record. And per American Enterprise Institute economist Mark Perry, nine times the average annual increase of 0.90% over the last half century. Moreover, in 2019, 29.4% of black households had income of 75% or more, compared with 28.7% of black households that had income of $25,000 or less. This was the first time ever that the percentage of high-income black households exceeded the percentage of low-income black households. Last September, the Federal Reserve published its Survey of Consumer Finances, published once every 3 years. The survey covers the three-year period 2016 to 2019. That would be the Trump years. Again, quoting, over this period, per the report, black net worth increased 32.1%, Hispanic net worth increased 63.6%, and white net worth increased 4%. Did you get that? Black net worth increased 32.1% from 2016 to 19, while white net worth increased 4%. Business equity among blacks increased 138%. According to the Census Bureau, in 2019, 88% of blacks had a high school diploma, 98% of the national average. In 1950, the percentage of blacks with a high school diploma equaled 50% of the national average. In 2018, 37.8% of blacks age 18 to 24 were enrolled in college, compared with a national average of 40.9% in this age group. And let's see. In the age group of 25 to 39, 28.4% had a bachelor's degree or higher, compared with 40.5% of the general population. High school dropout rate among blacks in 2018 was 4.9%, compared with the national average of 5.7%. And then she says this: am I trying to divert attention from the many real economic and social problems in many black communities? Certainly not. But what I do wish to disabuse is the focus on problems in certain black communities and using this data to generalize about all blacks. It's certainly false and a distortion and ironic how often this is coming from those who pretend to be fighting racism. It is certainly true, according to the Census Bureau, that in 2019, blacks, who constituted 13.2% of the population, represented 23.8% of those living below the poverty line. But is this about racism? The data tells us this is not about racism. This is about family breakdown, not racism. According to statistics, only 6.4% of black households headed by a married couple live in poverty. 6.4%. So the greatest determination concerning poverty in the black community is the family. The family. Now, those statistics, is that what you're told by the media and activists? No.